Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a full 30 minutes of movie talk. This week we're going to cover Child Eater, Star Wars casting, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Angie Han and Christy Pochko.
Hi!
Hello!
Alright, so we are going to kick things off with my own movie, Child Eater, which just wrapped principal photography. Kind of can't believe it. It was about a month's worth of absolute craziness, 3 weeks of shooting. We shot for 19 days, most of which were done up in Catskill, New York, and I knew it was going to be a lot of work. I knew it was going to be stressful, but like this experience kind of blew my mind. It was exhausting. We barely slept, and there was a lot of stuff to deal with, but it was so much freaking fun, and I am so damn proud of every single thing we accomplished. I keep sorting through the stills at this point because I just can't believe certain frames of this movie, and I am obsessed with like looking back at it. It's kind of sad to think it's over. When we first started, I couldn't wait until we finished just to know that we had it all and had it all in our hard drive and it was done, but I'm like kind of homesick for it now. It's weird to go from living with 30 people for an entire month to coming back and living by myself, but like, thank God my cat Dewey is here. Otherwise, I'd be super, super lonely. But you guys were lucky enough to visit the set. What did you guys think when you came up?
Oh my God, your set is so creepy. So I don't know. I guess I'm probably allowed to say where it is, right?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay, so it's like an abandoned game farm, which I guess is like a combination of a petting zoo and a farm or something. Is that correct?
It's called the Old Catskill Game Farm. And it's funny because a couple people who worked on the movie happened to have visited it as kids. And it's basically, it's called a game farm, and it's basically like a zoo / petting zoo. And it was up and running for years and years and years, like a Catskill staple. And then I want to say like a decade ago, it shut down. And rather than, you know, completely vacate the area, they literally just left everything there kind of to rot. Like, if you went in some of the buildings, you guys didn't see the giraffe house, but if you went in there, there were these diaries with handwritten notes about all the animals. So it says, like, snake is missing on this day, monkey gets sick on this day. And it's just all right there. It was just left there, and it happened to be the perfect setting for our movie.
When we walked in, it's like, immediately, it looks all, like, decrepit and old and, like, awful and creepy, and you feel like horrible things are going to happen, even though when we went, it was, like, the middle of the day.
It was nice out, which was, like, the first time we had seen nice weather in months.
Yeah, it was so nice. Christy actually got a sunburn.
I did, but only half of my face, because I am a lady of mystique.
But because it's a creepy place, you know, even when it was super nice out and we were, like, basking in the sun, we'd go in there and it would drop, like, 20 degrees. It was freezing.
It really was. Yeah. The day you guys were there, we shot in a building that they call the Rhino Building, which literally has, like, rooms where rhinoceros get baths and they get fed. And we shot that day in the basement of that building, and it would be, what was it, like, 60 degrees outside. You went inside this building, it was literally 40 degrees inside, and it was freezing.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was the first horror movie set visit that I had done. And so that was actually kind of exciting to get to see, like, what is all that like? And I have to say, well, the most jarring thing that is not a spoiler that I can say is just watching people with fake blood all over their hands casually eating pretzels from craft service.
I know, it happened over and over, no matter how many times I saw that, it got me every time, because, like, so, you know, we actually saw...
People look terrifying, they're covered in blood and viscera, and they're like, so, what are you guys doing? It's nice out today.
I know, like, we saw, like, the villain guy, and when the camera's on, he's, like, really, like, scary and, like, off-putting, but then, like, between ticks, he's just, like, joking around with, like, everyone else, he's being, like,
he's, like,
friendly.
One of the funniest, silliest guys, too, so it's so funny to watch him, like, just acting like himself with all that stuff on.
I remember there was, like, one part where he was, like, waiting for his, like, scene to start, and then the on-set photographer was there, so he was, like, posing on the staircase like a diva, and he was just, like, laying it up, and it was, like, the funniest thing.
There was also your child star who is, like, beyond precocious.
Alan.
He's such a smart kid. He said, what word did he say? Like,
he said authentic.
Authentic. He commended the villain on his authentic moment, and I was like...
He's incredible. I'm going to say it right now. Watch out for that kid, because he's going to be something special. Because on set, he is the most professional kid I've ever met. Even actually the first day when we brought him into audition in person for the first time, he just walks up to me and he's like, "Hi, I'm Colin. Nice to meet you." Like, what kid does that? And just, this kid never delivered a bad take. Not from the beginning of the shoot to the end of the shoot. And every single still I have of him is like pure gold. His face, he's adorable. And his family is just so special. They're just so supportive. And, you know, when you cast a kid in a horror movie where you have to shoot the large majority of the stuff outside in the cold at night, you really need support from the whole group and not just a solid young actor.
Mm-hmm.
But it was weird being on set and seeing them all in the middle of all the blood and gore, because I can watch anyone get ripped apart on screen, but when it's people you know and, like, you see them, like, even though I know it's makeup, like, our lead actress who I worked on the short with, who I know very well at this point, when I saw some of her, like, gory kind of makeup, it was really off-putting and unsettling. I had a hard time looking at her. But, I mean, maybe when it's cut together and it's in context, it'll feel a little more natural. But our hair, makeup, and makeup effects person, Fiona Tyson, was just absolutely incredible. The amount of work she had to do, and she didn't even have an assistant. She'd literally do it all day by herself, like putting fake, what they do when our villain rips out people's eyes is the way you have to make that look real, is the actor closes his or her eye, and then she puts the prosthetic on over it and, like, builds an eye socket, an empty eye socket over it. So she had to do that on one day in particular, I mean, like, 4 or 5 times over, which is a ton of work for one person to do, on top of building our villain every single day. It's just incredible.
Do you have a particular moment that you want to single out as, like, the highlight of the shoot for you?
It's hard to say. I think one of the most fun times I had was, like, not on set. At one point, it was Erlinger, the director's birthday, and we all came back to the house, and it was towards the end of the shoot, so we were all in, like, celebration mode to begin with, and I just had so much fun being with all these people, and I'll never forget that. But on set, I think one of my favorite things, because it's something that I never thought I'd be able to accomplish for some reason, is finding and building a cop car. I was just really, like, daunted by that task, and I didn't want to have to go through a picture car company because they're very expensive, and I was so worried about that. And finally, one day, I drove past this random lot that takes police cars, strips them down, and then turns them into cabs that, you know, turn into yellow cabs for New York City. And I pulled in there, and it just so happens that they had a bunch that weren't completely broken down. And this guy was so nice and willing to put the lights back on for us and attach some of the, you know, the accessories. And all of a sudden, we had a cop car, and all we had to do is pay a little extra money to get our town decal on the side. So it says on the side of the car, the town where our story takes place. And every
I remember you shared an Instagram of that. That was pretty cool.
Every time I saw that cop car, I'm just like, wow. Like, I like this. I am so happy, and I feel proud of something I've done. This is wonderful. But I'm proud of this one to be there.
And, like, everybody kept saying to us, or, like, I was like, it's so pretty here. It's so nice here because it's, like, just so much nature. And then people were like, yeah, wait until night falls. And thankfully, we headed home when night fell. But, like, even just driving back, because you guys shot in the Catskills, driving back to New York City, it was just black everywhere. It was black, and then our two little pin headlights. And it's just like, what? Like, you forget how dark places that are not New York City get.
You also forget that there's stars in the sky. And as creepy as that camp got, when I would look up and actually see, like, a whole freaking sky full of them, I'd be like, wow. But the camp was really creepy at night, also because the only lights we had were our working lights by our set, and every once in a while, you'd have to walk away, and, like, all we had were flashlights or headlamps. And even though I know it's fine, like, I'd be walking down a dark alley and, like, shining my flashlight, like, waiting for, you know, like, to flick it one way and, like, to see a face in a bush. I don't know.
Can I ask you a dumb question?
Yeah, go for it.
Did you see any wild – did you, like, run into any wild animals because you were out in the middle of nature?
There were a couple incidents where people would be driving back up the mountain and, like, deer would cross the road. And there was a pheasant at a point. The only, like, direct animal encounter we had, though, actually two of them. One was the mouse in our house, who we saw quite often. We kept it pretty clean, too, but I guess, like, being in that area, you can't help it. But
that's a pretty New York-y problem, too, though.
We affectionately named it Mousy, and it would, like, clean up the food that we dropped on the floor, so maybe it was okay. But then at one point, we saw a dead deer, which had been kind of mangled on the game farm. I think the owners, their dogs had maybe ripped a leg off of it, and oddly enough, its eyes had been removed, which is really weird and kind of really similar to our movie. But yeah, that was probably the closest encounter we had with an animal.
Do you think maybe that was the villain actor just trying to be method?
Yeah, it was him getting into character.
I don't even think he's capable of that.
That's what he wants you to think.
Yeah,
that's
really.
That's how he gets away with it.
There's been one too many eye puns and jokes on this set. But it was good fun. It's one heck of an experience, and I am so happy I went through it. It's exhausting, but I'm so freaking proud of everything we came out with and every single person, because everyone did more than what we expected of them, and I love every single one of them.
Two questions.
Yeah.
One, would you do this again? And number two, when do you estimate that the finished product will come out?
If it was a couple, like, knowing what I know now, if the question was, like, if I'd go through it again with this film, like, I always would have made the same choices I did with this. I had to do this no matter what. Ideally, if I produced another movie, I would like to do it with more money. If I did it with more money, I would do it in a heartbeat. But I'm not going to lie, doing it with the budget we had is definitely where a good deal of the stress came from. But if we had more money, it would have made it easier. But this was I wouldn't trade this experience for anything in the world. And when is it going to come out? So, ideally, we'd like it to be on the festival circuit next year. So we're hoping to have, you know, maybe some material to share towards the end of this year. That maybe we could share some more official stills or maybe even a clip or something. But the plan is for Child Eater to be on the festival circuit in 2015.
In the meantime, we'll have a link to Perry's Instagram and such below, so you can check out some of the things that she has been sharing from set, because even just stuff from her iPhone has been incredibly cryptic looking.
Hashtags Child Eater and Catskills Killer. If you want to see some stuff, there's loads of photos there. All right, so moving on to the next topic. Christy, we're going to go to you for some Star Wars casting news.
Yeah, so you'd have to be under a rock to not know that Star Wars Episode 7 finally got going with its casting this week. On board, we have Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew, Kenny Baker, all back on board playing all the characters they played from before. But in addition, we have Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, John Boyega, Andy Serkis, Domhnall Gleeson, Max von Sydow, and Daisy Ridley. Now, it's been drawing a lot of attention because everyone is automatically trying to decipher who is cast in what roles because no one knows anything about who these people are playing. Not really. But additionally, there's been a lot of talk about the lack of diversity in the cast because despite the fact that the grander universes of Star Wars that exist outside the movies include a lot of female characters, we got Daisy Ridley. Good for Daisy Ridley. Where are other women in this wide universe of adventures has kind of been the resounding question. But before we get to that, let's talk about the actual casting. What do you guys think of the new additions to the cast?
You know, other than the fact that I would have liked to see more women on there, I think it's a fantastic cast. There's no one here that I don't know who Daisy Ridley is, and I think, you know, no one really does. She's pretty new. But other than her, there's no one here that I'm like, oh, what is this, you know, what are they thinking? That person can't act. That person sucks. So, you know, it's hard to argue with any of these choices. And I'm so excited to see especially John Boyega getting a big role because I think after Attack the Block, we all wanted to be like, we were all like, oh my God, what's he going to do next? Like, this guy is so young and exciting and he has so much potential. And he's been in a few things since then, but nothing nearly as high profile. So I'm really pumped to see him get like a really big role.
It's
really
about big, time.
Yes.
I'm excited to see him do something, and I'm also really excited for Adam Driver, especially after all that Batman vs. Superman talk and, like, nothing came of it. So I'm glad he got something, and I'm also just so eager to see him outside of the girls' universe to see what he's really capable of. We got a little bit from him in Inside Llewyn Davis, but, I mean, that was more of a cameo than anything. So I'm kind of excited to see. I hope he gets, like, a meaty role to work with here. I mean, there's so many people sitting in that circle, so how much...
The rumor is that he's going to play a quote-unquote villain, but what that means in the world of Star Wars is hard to tell yet.
You never know.
Also, I want to point out that I think I've heard that the reason he didn't get that Batman-Superman role is because he is got this role instead, so you don't have to feel bad about that. And I'm also excited to see Oscar Isaac, who's, like, even when he's in a shitty movie, he like he gives it his Sucker all. Punch. He's like the best. Exactly. He like he goes all out with it, and he's someone that has been on the verge of like blowing up really big for a while. So that's exciting. Same, I guess you could say for Donald Gleason.
I like Donald Gleason. I'm about really time excited for him.
Yeah, he's who he's knew that that would be the Weasley movie. That has like the biggest career, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, the thing is that Donald Gleason, like, he was just a Weasley brother in the Harry Potter movies, but then he did Anna Karenina, and that was when I was like, who is this guy? Because he is such a great performance in that, and it's not a movie that tons of people saw, but he was really lovely. And then About Time came out, and people were like, who is this Joker with Rachel McAdams? What's that about? But he was really good in that, too, and he's getting a lot of attention, which is cool, because now he's a Star Wars actor. Like, I don't think any of them have quite thought about how this is just going to change everything. Like, they will never not be a Star Wars actor after this.
I think they've thought about it. I think that's part, you know, I'm sure that was a big thing that they weighed the risks and...
Well, this is, I gotta say, this is the biggest project, with the exception of Max von Sydow, who is kind of like an institution in
who was a legend, yeah, yeah, already.
Like, this is just monumental. Like, there are few movies, franchises bigger than Star Wars. I don't know if you can even say there are any that are bigger than Star Wars.
I don't know, though. Like, I'm sure this is going to be life-changing for all of them, but when I think back to the newer trilogy, episodes 1 through 3, like, I don't really care about any of those people now.
Yeah, but I would actually argue that how big Star Wars is kind of part of that, because, you know, like, if Hayden Christensen hadn't been cast in Star Wars and made everyone hate him because, you know, people didn't like him in those movies, who knows what kind of career he would have? I think that
that's a very good point.
I think that it really affected his career a lot, just not in a positive way necessarily. Like, everyone knows who he is now, but one of the reasons I think that, you know, he hasn't been able to do more other things is because he's always going to be associated with that role.
That's totally true. It's like if these movies are bad, even if it's not these actors' fault, there's going to be a continuum of people that just never want to see them again. Contingent,
yes.
Not continuum.
I'm definitely nervous that that's going to be the case, too. I need some more story details right now.
Yeah.
Because whenever I see J.J. Abrams hanging around these people, all I think is the Star Wars version of Star Trek. And
yeah,
I can't shake
much.
That feeling. Like, if there's lens flares all over the place here, I'm going to cry.
I don't think he'll ever make that over-eagerness of a device again.
He claims that even he understands now that he has been using too much lens flare, so...
I know, because it's still in Star Trek in the darkness.
I imagine him in, like, a... who's it from?
Clockwork Orange?
Thank you. Like, someone sitting him down Clockwork Orange style and be like, look at the lenses, JJ. Look at them. And then he was like, I get it now. but what about can we talk about the actual contents and the diversity of the cast? Does
yes.
the lack of gender diversity in the cast bother either of you?
Absolutely. I mean, okay, first I want to say, you know, I love that one of the new actors is a black man, and I love that one of them is a Latino man. That's great. I'm really happy to see that, because he could have easily gone all white, and, you know, most people wouldn't have batted an eye. So that's great. I want to give him credit for that. And there is talk that there is one pretty big female role left to be cast, so, you know, and you know, I'm sure that there's
to be a quote-unquote multiracial woman.
Right. That's apparently, supposedly, the one that, like, Lupita Nyong'o was, like, that the one that people thought that she was going to be in. I don't know. And, you know, who knows, like, what other minor roles or major roles they might still have coming out. All that said, I mean, it's one new... It's so frustrating, because this is a movie where they could have gone out on a limb and cast more women, because it's a fucking Star Wars movie. They could have made it half women and people would have still seen it. I don't think they have the same excuse of like, oh, no one will go see a movie unless it's about a white man, because this is fucking Star Wars. That's bigger than that kind of thing.
It's
really disappointing.
You and I talked about this a little bit the other day when we went to see a movie together. Is that idea that overseas audiences only see things with white men is categorically being broken down again and again. We're seeing
absolutely
like,
incorrect. But
yeah,
I think
we're seeing things like Hunger Games and Frozen. We're seeing things like Fast and the Furious, which is huge overseas. It's huge domestically. It's huge overseas. And I think if people want to look to, and actually, Angie wrote about this at one point before, the diversity casting, and I hate calling it that because I feel like people hear diversity casting and think tokenism. It doesn't need to be about that. It's just that instead of having a breakdown that says, you know, white male, early 20s, you just say male, early 20s, and let the race fall where it may. But what I was saying is Fast and Furious movies have people of just about any kind of heritage background you'd want, and they're all in a movie, and they're all exciting, and they're all fun to watch, and, like, it doesn't have to be a thing, you know what I mean? Like, that was, like, a thing comments from the screenwriter who did Noah made recently about why there are no people of color in his movie. He was, like, he basically said he didn't want it to be a thing or didn't want it to be, like, Star Trek, and the implication was, like, you have to have one of everybody or somebody will be upset. Like, that's stupid and insane. You just need to look around and realize that the world isn't all white people, so representing that in film isn't going to rattle people near as much as people seem to think it will.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's like racial diversity is a little bit better here than it is in, say, Avengers, where all of the Avengers are white. But I mean, it's one woman in a Star Wars movie. It's just like in the original trilogy when it was Carrie Fisher, and then the prequel trilogy where it was Natalie Portman. This time it's, so far at least, it looks like that's Daisy Ridley's burden to bear.
And as a lot of fans have pointed out, the wider universes, the TV shows and the comics and all that kind of stuff, which I admittedly am less familiar with, but I was talking with someone who's a big fan of all that stuff before, and they were saying that those actually had a lot of female characters that were interesting and complex, and that Disney has kind of put the foot down and be like, those are non-canonical for as far as what we're doing. We're going by the movies. Which, just because they're going by the movies doesn't mean, I mean, they might be not using those same characters, or they might be interpreting them differently, or who knows, because they're all doing that mystery box J.J. Abrams thing where it's like, no one gets to know what this movie's about, even though it's Star Wars.
How much you want to bet that Adam Driver is playing Khan?
Yeah, that tactic is not going to work for J.J. Abrams much longer. I am not so bothered by this just yet. I want to hear story details. As long as there's some sort of reason, and they justify it in the end, and it's not just a completely... Like, I want there to be a reason for there to be male cast members.
Well, also, at some point, I mean, May 4th is coming up. I'm almost wondering if we'll get that final announcement of another potential female character then.
Maybe. I mean, I want to... Some people have pointed out, like, look, you know, it's not just about quantity. Quality is also a big part of it. Like, for all we know, Daisy Ridley is the most important new character and all the rest of them are supporting. We don't know because we don't know any of the story. But to that, I would say, I mean, yes, quality matters, but so also does, like, quantity isn't nothing. It's not cool that there's one woman out of, you know, seven new cast members. It's pathetic that this, that because Carrie Fisher is also in this movie, this is one of the most, you know, female-heavy Star Wars movies we've ever gotten. Like, that's just sad.
But I totally like to bet even after they blow through these big announcements, I bet you anything there's going to be supporting cast announcements that they'll make a huge deal about, and hopefully that's where we'll fill our quota.
Hopefully.
It's just, I think we can all agree, it's just the idea of allowing movies to be as interesting and full of diversity and different kinds of people and faces and, you know, all kinds of whatever, as life is, because, you know, I feel like we've hit a point where we want something more and different than movies than just the same, you know, interchangeable white guys. It's almost a joke how many, like, you know, I mean, it's like with Saturday Night Live, to not go on a huge tangent, but they were like, we need more people. Let's cast six white guys and a girl. You know, the world is bigger than this. And, like, the Star Wars universe is most certainly bigger than this. So I'm just kind of... But like you said, we don't know who's being cast in what, so it's hard to get too up in arms in it. But I do want to say, I understand the outrage and the desire to see more female characters in this world.
Yeah, I just want to point out that men never have to choose between quality and quantity when it comes to how many male members are in this cast and what are they doing. Like, that's not really a thing they have to think about very often.
Yeah,
I get it.
When a guy does badly, no one's going, well, we should stop making movies fronted by guys. Clearly no one's into that. White guys? No one wants to see it because nobody saw RoboCop. No one's doing that.
What's wrong with RoboCop?
I liked RoboCop. I don't think it did well.
Well, RoboCop had a lot of problems, but that was literally a whole other episode that we talked about already, so we probably don't have to rehash that here.
All right, so we're done to solving racial issues for today.
All right, so next up then, The Amazing Spider-Man.
Andy, The Amazing Spider-Man. Oh, I'm sorry. I got really excited. I guess I'm jumping
in. Are you really that excited?
No.
I wore a T-shirt. I had a T-shirt.
Cut off a little bit, but I say it.
Anyway.
There you go.
Okay, very, very sexy t-shirt.
You're welcome, world.
All right, so Chrissy last episode was like, Angie, you always manage to pick the section that has the hardest plot to explain. And guess what, guys? I did it again because The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is like four movies mashed up into one. Well, that might be an exaggeration, but there's a lot of plot. So I'll try to get through it as quickly as I can. Otherwise, we'll be talking about this for the next 15 minutes, just doing the plot. It picks up, you know, where... When it begins, Spider-Man has become a lot more, you know, he's used to being Spider-Man now. He's a lot more comfortable with it. He's pretty happy with his life. But because, you know, if it's just him being happy, there's no movie, conflicts occur. So plot thread number one is his relationship with Gwen, where, you know, they obviously still madly love each other and they want to be together. But the ghost of Dennis Leary keeps showing up to remind him that he made a promise that he wouldn't put Gwen in danger and blah, 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 blah. So then they have to break up. And then there's a whole thing about how she might want to move away from New York and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It goes back and forth. That's basically plot thread number one. Number two, Electro, played by Jamie Foxx. He starts out as a... You know, an electrician or electrical engineer?
Yeah, he's an electrical engineer.
Yes, who works for Oscorp, and he's very, like, awkward and very lonely, and he feels invisible, and one day, you know, Spider-Man rescues him when, I forget actually what exactly...
The Rhino's attacking.
Right, the Rhino's attacking, and Spider-Man rescues him, and, you know, he talks to Max, and Max feels really special, and then he builds up this whole creepy stalkery thing in his head where he thinks him and Spider-Man are besties. And then he gets... And then an accident happens, he gets powers, he turns bright blue, and there's, I don't want to get into too much detail, but, you know, there's a misunderstanding.
Well, you can say he becomes a villain, that's in the trailer.
Right, there's a misunderstanding in, like, him and his relationship with Spider-Man, and he kind of then starts to hate Spider-Man and becomes one of the villains. So that's plot thread number two. Number three, Harry Osborn, played by Dane DeHaan. This is a guy that was, like, BFFs with Peter when they were little kids, and then he got sent away to boarding school. He comes back 7 years later. They apparently haven't talked in 7 years, but despite that, later on in the movie, Peter refers to him as his best friend, which, to be fair, there's no evidence that Peter has friends other than Gwen, so it probably is his best friend. You know, so, again, I don't want to get into too much detail or into too many spoilers, but, you know, so Dane DeHaan comes back. He has taken over, his father passes away, so he is now in charge of Oscorp, and there's something that he needs from Peter, who he does not know is Spider-Man. So, is that good enough for plot thread number three?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yes, and then on top of all this is, you know, there's like a whole storyline woven through about how Peter is still searching for the truth about his parents' past.
Hashtag daddy issues.
Right, because superhero... And they all have daddy issues of some kind or another, I feel like. And I think that's about it for the main plot threads. I mean, there's all sorts of Easter eggs and, like, cameos and, like, offhanded references, which was actually kind of one of the problems I had about this, is that it doesn't feel like it's a movie in its own right. It feels like it's the second installment of a larger story, which it is, but it doesn't make for a very satisfying experience as a movie. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I enjoyed sections of this movie, but it didn't feel like a movie to me. It felt like, I mean, I've been recapping Game of Thrones lately for Mary Sue, which is awesome and a lot of fun to write about, but there are episodes where you're like, oh, this is a bookkeeping episode. This is an episode where we are laying down stuff you need to know so that we can get to the good stuff later. And so much of this movie feels like bookkeeping. Like, for instance, we spend the huge first section of the movie recapping stuff that we already know happened from the first film. We're like, at the beginning of this movie, Peter and Gwen are back together again. And you're like, wait, but I thought you guys broke up at the last one. But then they're like, only together for a hot minute so that they can break up together again. You're just like, why was any of this part of the movie? Why didn't we start with them broken up and then go from there? Because of all these things that you're like, we don't really need this in the story. It just makes the movie feel really kind of convoluted. But I liked certain threads. The Electro thread I thought was really interesting and kind of heartfelt, but it gets dropped very abruptly. And then the Harry Osborn thread I thought was really interesting, but it's just they've overstuffed it with so many things that I don't think the storytelling gets a lot of the proper screen time it deserves.
Yeah, and it kind of felt to me like, on the one hand, there's way too much going on, and then on the other hand, the stuff that they have going on, it seems like they don't devote enough time to it. Like, for example, I was joking earlier about how Harry Osborn shows up out of nowhere, and suddenly he's Peter's best friend. Like, that... You know, that was something they kind of, it's a little bit different than it was in the Sam Raimi movies, but they basically did the same thing there. And, you know, Spider-Man 3 was not a good movie, but at least you kind of understood, like, you know, why it feels like a gut punch when he becomes a villain. Whereas in this one, it's like, oh, a character we don't know is here. Oh, he's a really important character all of a sudden. Oh, mm-hmm. Now he's going to go be a villain. Like,
hey, guys, pay attention because we need you to get invested in this guy, okay? Okay? Okay, we're going to get back to him in about half hour. It just, like, there are parts that I thought worked really neatly, but I was just kind of, I don't know, I had a hard time following it. I was just kind of, not, like, narratively, like, I got what was happening, but I was not particularly interested the whole way through. And it's a long movie. Isn't it, like, 2.5 hours?
It's about 2.5 hours. I don't know. To me, it felt like I was watching... It didn't feel like the second movie in a trilogy of movies. It felt like the middle 6 episodes of an 18-episode season that were then condensed into 2.5 hours. So it just felt like there's a lot going on. There's not that much consistency. Plot threads appear out of nowhere and vanish out of nowhere. And it kind of felt like maybe if we had stretched this out into the Spider-Man story out into 18 hours of television, it would have made more sense the way that things kind of like show up and then recede back into the background. Mm-hmm. And aren't spoken about again, and things like that.
How did it look? Did the Electro stuff at least look good?
Yeah, I actually think the effects are really great in this. The visual effects
it's
are really
much
strong.
Better than the last film. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even though I think Electro is kind of a goofy-looking villain, it looked okay. It looked all right. I do take issue with when Jamie Foxx is Electro, I think his performance is great. When he's just Max, it's like he's in a cartoon. Like, everybody else is, like, slightly heightened, and they're like, come on, Peter, let's get our stuff together. And it's, like, a little heightened, but he's like, oh, I don't know. I just, oh, problems. I don't know. And it's just so, I don't know. I can't believe I just, all right.
I felt like that was, I feel like it's not just limited to Jamie Foxx. Like, there's a lot of that
Jerry
movie
Lewis.
That.
It's so weird.
What?
He's like Jerry Lewis at the beginning of the movie. It's just, it's not, I was just, like, Peter Parker shows up, and he's like, hey, I'm a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I get it. I get it being, like, a little goofy, a little heightened, but, like, it's just so much. Like, his choices are so big in the beginning.
I'm not sure the movie knows exactly how cartoony and comic booky it wants to be. So then you have things like Jamie Foxx's performance, which is, you know, a little bit bigger, going against these really, like, you know, subdued naturalistic moments between Peter and Gwen. Mm-hmm. And then you have characters like the Rhino, who isn't in it that for that long, but he's another very cartoony villain, and the movie's like a little all over the place tonally. That said, I thought that it was better paced than the last one. I thought that I was excited that we weren't just getting the origin story again, because if I don't have to ever watch
Except
another superhero
kind of
origin
you.
Story, I'll be so happy.
Like, that's what I found frustrating. Ultimately, Spider-Man's arc in this is the same arc he had in the last movie, which, without getting into serious spoilers, we can't get into, but it's the same arc.
Yeah, it's not as different as you would hope, yeah. I will grant you that.
How do you think this is going to leave people, though? Because, like, I've seen superhero movies where they're not that great, but then they throw in that one little thing at the end that makes you want another installment. Are people going to care for more after this?
I think so, because they're already spinning it into a much bigger world, which is a big part of... These aren't even intentional puns, guys. I just can't help it. No, I think that they're already spinning it into a much bigger world, and I think people are going to be on board for that. And what I actually think is kind of cheap is the way the movie adds on, like, a rousing victory scene to the ending so that we don't go out on a down note. Which
it bothered me until I realized that basically what they just did was add what would be the post-credit sequence in a Marvel Studios movie and just, like, moved up earlier. And then once I thought of it that way, it bothered me less. It's weird because there's a point when you think the movie will end and then it keeps going and it turns out to be essentially the first scene in the next movie.
Sure.
But I was like, you know, otherwise we'd be sitting through the credits and waiting for it, so...
Except that why I think they did that is because they don't want it to have a sad ending. And the movie has a sad ending, whether or not you tack on the scene that happens after the sad ending anyway.
That's true.
I don't know. I'm not sure how people are going to respond to this. It's funny because I'm seeing critics get really divided. Some people are really defending this movie, and others are saying, like, it was fine. I enjoyed it okay. I don't think it's a good movie. I think if you really love Spider-Man, there's a lot of stuff here. So that's, and you're getting your money's worth in that it is 2.5 hours, a half hours of a lot of stuff. And the special effects are really great. The action scenes are a lot of fun. There's some really fun Spider-Man banter, and I think Andrew Garfield, I like Andrew Garfield a lot better both as Spider-Man and Peter Parker, so I think he does a great job. I think Gwen Stacy and Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy is really terrific. I wish she had more to do in this movie, but
Yeah, to me, I think that the really, really just amazing performances and incredible chemistry between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone is what makes it so much easier. In the first one, it was what made it so much easier for me to gloss over a lot of flaws. Mm-hmm. You know, is true to me in the second one. Overall, I thought that, you know, they're just as good as they always were.
Jamie Foxx is great in this.
Dean DeHaan is good in this. Jamie Foxx, I mean, I know you thought his performance was a little
bit tough. I like him in Electro. As Max, it was just... Especially because Electro gets his powers via Catwoman in Batman Returns, which as much as I love Batman Returns and will defend it forever, I tried to talk my husband into getting matching iPhone cases that are Batman. He was not into it. But aside from that, I love that movie, but the fact that Catwoman gets her powers by having cats nibble her at her, it's equally stupid as having get your powers because electric eels nibble at
you. To be fair, is there a non-stupid way to give a person super animal powers? I feel like no, so...
Spider-Bite's pretty good. Because it's like
not
one
that good. It's still pretty dumb.
It is still... But then it's like you're injected at least. Like, I don't know. It just seemed
anyway.
Like...
We should probably wrap up because I feel like we could have a whole other conversation about how the dumb ways that comic book superheroes get their powers. So, I don't know. Overall, I thought that this one was more fun than the last one. I think Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone are still excellent, but it's still a movie that I thought had some problems. So, overall, I liked it. I didn't love it. What about you?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I enjoyed it. It was, you know, there's stuff to like about it. I just don't... People are asking if it's better than the last one. I think I like the last one better because the last one held together as a story for me more.
That's true. I think this one's more fun, though, and faster paced, in my opinion.
This one's definitely faster paced, but the problem is the pacing's like, let's go over here, and now over here, and now over here. It just feels kind of cluttered, but I liked it okay. I think if you're a Spider-Man fan, you won't be disappointed. I'm more curious to see what they'll do next, and I'm kind of hoping... As it's the third film, they might have like a narrower view or a more clear drive as opposed to, let's wrap up what we did last time, throw in a really quick other story, and start setting up stuff for next time. Like, I just wish this felt more like a movie and less like a bridge.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen because they still have Venom and Sinister Six and they want to make a Spider-Man 4. And yeah, this story is never going to be resolved. Never, ever, ever.
Which is why I'm stuck seeing it now, no matter what.
Aww.
I am curious enough, though.
I think you'll enjoy it. I'm hoping I'll be more excited for upcoming summer releases than this. Like, this was fun. I did knock my socks off.
But it is what it is, and I'll be okay with that. Yep. Is that accurate enough?
Yep.
All right, I'll take it. And in that case, that is it for this week. But if you enjoyed the show, you can keep following along at popcornprosecco.com. Catch us on Twitter at popcornprosecco. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Popcorn Prosecco. And, of course, you can catch all three of us all over the web. Angie, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN. And you can find my writing on /film.
And Christy?
You can follow me at Cinema Blend or follow me on Twitter. I write a lot at Cinema Blend. Follow me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko. And be sure to check out my Game of Thrones recaps every Monday on the Mary Sue.
And you can catch me at movies.com, comingsoon.net, collider.com, screenrant.com. We got this covered, shocky.com, and also on Twitter. My handle is P. Nemiroff. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.